Just like 60% of job applications on the internet, he holds out his hand for a friendly welcoming shake, knowing full well the offer isn't real. And welcome back to Monday Night Fake Fights, where I, Garrick Taylor, she, they, am doing a rewatch of the Monday Night Wars and making everyone's problem, as if we have, you know, not enough. This week's esteemed victim is...
Hi, my name is Arturo Garcia. He, his. You might have heard Brooke Minkowski mention me a few episodes ago, a colleague of hers at Snopes and Truth or Fiction. And I can take pleasure in knowing that I got her a lore dump on the Golden Lovers.
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is big deal. You're a Hall of Famer now. In the Monday night Fake Fights Hall of Famer, we have the person who lore dumped Brooke the Golden Lovers. Exquisite. I, for one, am applauding. Welcome, Art. That's fantastic.
Looking back, sorry.
No, go ahead.
It hits me now when Kenny and Kota reunited. What a remarkable moment that was, because of the fact that it connected with people outside of this fandom. I think that you can draw a line from that and Anthony Bowens on, I think it was Rampage more recently, where he had that interaction with Harley Cameron, and she's coming on to him and he points out, "Lady, I'm gay."
Yeah,
and the crowd begins chanting, "I'm gay," celebrating him.
Yeah, he's gay. He's gay. No, I talked about that. Oh, I'm so happy you brought that up. So, like, our general mandate of this show started as a place for, like, queer wrestling fans to talk because, like, we're the double shunned, you know? like, everybody gets shunned for being a wrestling fan, plus we're the bizarre ones, if you will. It was that sort of thing, and there's a lot of us, but it's kind of just expanded because, like, I'm finding that a lot of people just, of wrestling fans, too, just have that of, like, we have that shared, we were bullied for this, you know? like, we were bullied for being into this shit. So, like, it creates that space that I'm very happy I have where everyone has a lot to say about this, because you are absolutely right that is that thing where we saw a lot of it in Raw, we'll get to. It was not great for the gays in 1996, but to have the direct line from what Kenny and them did to Anthony Bowens getting cheered and celebrated for being gay and having them, like I popped so hard when that happened. I just, like, stomped around the room, like, God damn it. We get to have Daddy Ass, the guy who they tried to bury with an anti-gay character in my youth, now, like, doing this, like, I love the world.
And, you know, I think there was a moment, it was after the Acclaim won the tag championship, they had their celebratory promo, and Bowens gets up there, and I had the sincere thought, you know, this guy, if he ran for office, I'd give him a look.
No, real.
No, because he has that connection, he has sincerity, you know, on top of the athleticism and improvement he's shown as a wrestler. But I think he's one of those talents we have right now that there's money to be made with him, with or without the Acclaim.
Yeah, and I think more and more people are getting sick of Max's shit, because, like, Max is... I always loved Max. I loved his little bit, but I can never tell where his politics were. I don't think he knows where his politics are. And I think people are starting to get real fucking sick of dancing around. Like, why is he being so weird, dude? You know, like y'all are really cool. What's up with this guy? I am definitely in the camp of free Bowens. So needless to say, my next question is usually what history, if any, you have with wrestling. You're telling me you're a current fan with this conversation. So that's cool. that's amazing. And Brooke did, mention you as the person who gave her whatever she knew about wrestling and then dropped the bomb on me that she covered Lucha because, of course, she did. Because it's Brooke in Tijuana, because she's like you said, she's fearless. Like, she's like, no, I'll do this. I don't care. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, that shit's crazy. Like, it's, I know a little bit about Lucha. I know a lot more about Japan, New Japan stuff I've gotten more into, but you showed me something we're looking at possibly for the Patreon that I'm excited to look at of like what was going on in AAA in 1996. So look out for that, patrons.
And, you know, I know that at this point, someone of the guests talks about their history, and I'm an old, I'm Gen X, but I'm also an old, at this point in 1996, mm-hmm. I was not yet a smart, but I'd already had the experience of growing up. I grew up in Mexico. I was bilingual by the time I was five. That was, there's no accent. It was pure luck.
Yeah.
But I grew up watching Lucha. Watching EMLL, the precursor to CMLL today.
Yeah.
And following the magazines. And Lucha, like a lot of subcultures, had a really good zine culture, the 70s and 80s. Cool.
That tracks, you know? I never thought about that. But, you know, I've talked before, like the Observer in America, it's just a zine. Like, he thought he invented zines. It's just like, no, you just had the biggest wrestling one.
And in Meltzer's case, you know, he argued at one point he was more diligent about applying what we call journalistic standards to the coverage as opposed to the aftermags, which
I would like to clarify quickly. I don't hate on Dave Meltzer's history. I am so happy for it. Lately, he does stuff that makes me go, come on, guy, just retire. Like, just... We've grown past the need for him because, like, I don't know what if he knows what to do in a post internet world, if that makes sense. That's why
I'm also concerned, you know, let's say he hung it up tomorrow and rested on his laurels after all these decades. Mm-hmm. I'm not that confident in the scene after him because you've got Sean Sapp, who does some serious reporting, but he's also out there trying to get indie gigs.
Yeah,
if you tune into any rum at an AEW or WWE event, half the questions are clearly just to drive lowest common content denominator.
Yeah, it's like they made the mistake of getting themselves in on the show, and like they're in on the kayfabe now, and like it doesn't work the way that it worked for Meltzer and them back then, because like what they called the dirt sheets is like, well, no, they're just telling the truth with, like you said, a bit of journalistic standards, which for guys like Hogan, that's dirt, brother. Like, no, that's terrible. I don't want people to have standards and ethics around me. That's against my whole bag. So like, it makes sense. But no, that's, I'm so happy you came on. Cause like, that's a great conversation of like, it's not so much that I hate Meltzer. I'm not one of those people. I don't understand how he continues to do what he does now and have it work. And like you said, I'm very concerned for what happens if he hangs it up because like, I don't have the highest hopes for wrestling journalism. Part of the, what compelled me to do this show as just being really tired of having not a lot of podcasts looking at this era that isn't just like old wrestlers looking back on it and telling bullshit and continuing the kayfabe. I wanted like people who may or may not have been fans like I was to like talk about like from that perspective. You know, it's like, this is a show for the marks. Like, I'm like, I don't have anything to say. I don't care about ratings because why the fuck would you, unless you're getting like a bit of that? I don't understand that. Like, I'm not one of those kinds of fans. It doesn't make sense to me. Why would you care about how AEW's ratings are doing unless you have stock in the company? It makes no sense to me. Like, I'm here for the grabs, you know? So like,
I have a guess as to that, but I want to put a pin on that for now.
Yeah.
To bring it back though,
yeah.
Lucha zines were kind of like the aftermags in that they mostly followed various promotions with, you know, with kayfabe intact. But what they did a lot was they would put up upcoming shows from independent arenas as well as the, you know, BML and EMLL and the big independent, which was UWA, which ran out of Torreo de Cuatro Caminos, a big bull fighting in Mexico City. And that was the promotion where Hogan went and worked a few dates. Andre worked a few dates there.
Abdullah
Butcher worked several dates there. So that was my first exposure to a lot of U.S. talent.
Because was their stop. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah.
The one story that stuck with me, though, and I think it helped shape how I think of wrestling as a whole, was this, like, it was like a two-page feature, a wrestler for EMLL at that point, MS1. He had lost his mask and he was still going strong on the circuit, but the feature was about his work as an architect. And if your local yokel TV news covers this story, the lead is probably something like, during the week, he's a mild-mannered architect, but on the weekends, he puts the smack down on, I used to write for my local NBC affiliate. The producer would shove that copy down my throat.
So you know this experience.
But for the magazine, the angle was, hey, this guy is a great wrestling talent, but he's also balancing a great career.
Yeah.
So it instantly put wrestling on par with architecture, and it treated it as a vocation,
which is pretty awesome. I feel like that's what Vince thought he was doing with the dumpster dudes, like Dumpster Jurosi and shit. Like that's what I think he thought he could, but he didn't have the soul of what you're talking about of it. Of like, he thought it was bringing it down instead of elevating it, like you're talking about.
There, you know. Like Shay was saying last week, there's an overall feeling at this point of wrestling searching for the next zeitgeist. And it's remarkable when we talk about this week in particular, February 1996, a lot of this just gets memory hold when we talk about the 90s of wrestling.
It does. I had that thought too. A lot of us, I was like, I can't believe this happened. For case in point, I couldn't fucking believe, what's his name? Haystacks, giant haystack showing up in WCW as Loch Ness. I didn't remember that at all. Like that's just a thing that apparently happened. And like I was watching the tapes and stuff at this point. I figure I would have an idea of that, but nope. Just memory hold. I don't know. That feels like a good transition though, as far as February 1996. I've been leaving it up to guests. Would you like to start with Nitro or Raw? Which one's the band-aid that we're peeling off?
Let's go with Nitro, because I think to me, spoilers in advance, I thought Raw was the better show. I think there's a lot more to unpack there this week. I think Nitro shows just how much of what was going on was about to get wiped away sooner for them.
Yeah,
because it took WWF at that point, you know, about an extra year there to really catch up. But these are the dying days like you said, what Hulk Hogan thought made for good wrestling.
Yep. The dying days of the Hogan era of WCW, because like it was, we've talked about that history of that, how like really WCW is the end of the NWA. It was like that, you know, where that ended up kind of becoming with Turner's money. And then all of a sudden Hogan shows up, and Hogan can't show up anywhere without turning it into the Hogan Show. So like this is kind of the end of that, where he finally goes, all right, Bischoff and these NWO cats are gonna come in and do the thing, but I'm still gonna be there and win the belt. So like as long as he's winning, Hogan doesn't care. But this is a great week for it. It keeps happening. We keep like stumbling into historic episodes, and I think I'm just entering that era now, and that makes me excited. As far as Nitro, though, chestnuts roasting on an urban street fire, kids. It's to date the episode. My still the intro that never needs to be changed because it's fucking perfect. And then live versus taped is, of course, called out from Knoxville, Tennessee by Eric. He lays it in thick this week as far as the jabs, and I can't blame him. As far as also obligatory Pepe talk. Both Mongo and Pepe are leathered for the truly exquisite. No notes, 10 out of 10. Mwah. But right off the bat, Eric throws a booty man question at Bobby Heenan. And Art, that's the one I invited you to. It's it's the booty man episode. It's his first full episode of Ed Leslie being the booty man. Bobby Heenan seems taken off guard by the question, which, I mean, that's a normal reaction to a booty man question. It's just, he's there now. Deal with it.
And look, you know, and again, as someone who grew up watching WWF and territory wrestling, for me, this period was all about reappraising talent that I'd already seen come through.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, Ed Leslie, I was a fan of the original Beefcake babyface era. You know, he had a certain swashbuckling quality. You know, you're just a cool guy.
I remember it from the tapes, because like before I realized that it was still live, I would watch tapes, and I remembered, like, I didn't realize at the time that Zodiac was this guy until all this went down, and I just kept giggling at Booty Man because I like was giggling. I was like, okay, the tapes have a Booty Man now. Oh, it's this guy. Oh, that's Barber Beefcake. I remember him. So like I had a bit of that, but also I was 8, so like I wasn't there for it. And like now going back and watching it, I'm just like, oh, Ed, what was going on here, Ed? Like, what are we doing here?
Well, did you notice? I mean, did it strike you as a missed opportunity? Because Bischoff hard sells the fact that this was Hogan's spy in the Dungeon of Doom.
Yep.
And I thought, man, you could have done a lot with him coming out of that. You could have made him like a proto Malachi Black.
Yes, exactly. No, that was the same thought I had. It the ridiculousness knocks me over the head, because it could have been a great thing if they had any other idea but him just being goofy and weird and kind of beefcakey and calling him Booty Man and like pointing at his butt. And it's just sad because it was a missed opportunity. You are correct. I kind of had that in my notes too. I was like, this could have been really cool, and Bischoff was trying real hard, and I'll give him there's a couple times where I find myself giving credit to Bischoff and all too. He really was doing the job here, but as far as doing the job also, first match we get nice crunchy rock riff, and it's Big Bubba, not the Big Boss Man, swear to God. And Eric does his thing right away. He tells us the World Whining Federation over there, and he just runs down the results of the whole card. So like I feel like this is the first time he has done that, where he's just like, here's every match, here's the results. So like they're getting real fed up with the Billionaire Ted stuff, which I understand. I am too. I can't blame them. And it's getting bad.
And you know, a lot of the previous year, because of life and all that, I just wasn't paying attention to wrestling as much. Mm-hmm. But watching these two episodes reminded me that 90s announcing was horrible.
Really bad. Yeah.
However, Bischoff running down the results was absolutely the right call. And I don't give him credit for a lot, because in a room full of carnies, Eric will always somehow be the most carny of all.
Yes.
But his instincts were dead on there. He was the upstart brand, upstart company. To further gain his foothold on Monday night, he had to do something that would make younger fans especially think they were listening to something forbidden.
Yeah, and that I don't think I've ever heard it put that way yet. Thank you for that. Yeah. I've often said that, like, this is definitely him taking advantage of the fact that it's live, and that was the right call. Like, that was the best move he had, was like forcing him to have to meet him face to face like that.
And you talk about drawing lines. You can draw a line between things like that and your typical Max Friedman promo.
Yep.
Where the overriding goal is to make you think you're not supposed to hear this. And in Max's case, he's got nowhere else to go with that, but that's another discussion.
Yeah, I was gonna say that could be a whole podcast. I love him. He's our scumbag, but also like at a certain point, my favorite thing with him was the Better Than You Bebe stuff, because they told a really amazing, vulnerable, emotional story, and that ended at Wembley, and it was really great. And the press conference afterwards was really great. And that I thought was like the height of it, where it's like you made him vulnerable instead of what I used to love about him, which is this like old school heel shit, like you're talking about, like, and drawing that line, like going low and making it forbidden. But like, you can only be an edgelord for so long before it just starts to come off as sad. Again, we'll get to that later in Raw. Eventually it's just gross, you know? Speaking of that, though, I did giggle. He did take a shot at Bob Holly, and I just like imagine Bob Holly just lacing up his boots, doing nothing, and it just pops in his head. What the fuck? Like, what did I do? Like, you're taking shots at me? What the fuck? Like, it's just Bob Holly. Like, that's just me.
Yeah, you know, the sad thing is that represented an upgrade in Bob Holly's career at the time. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone's talking about him. That's definitely an upgrade, which, oh, God. And I love, we'll get to that later. I love Bob. So that bit of pettiness out of the way, though, the man called Sting comes out. They mentioned Sting doing his NASCAR bit over the weekend. Bobby says that he needs to wash the grease off his hands and put the monkey wrench away. And that's like the end of that. They did NASCAR. I don't think they ever talk about it again, which is a theme in WCW. They keep trying to like cross-pollinate it this time with other like real stuff, and none of it's catching yet. They'll get there. The match itself is, you know, it's a lot of locking up and Ray being a heel. Just like 60% of job applications on the internet, he holds out his hand for a friendly, welcoming shake, knowing full well the offer isn't real. And I was just like, I felt that in my soul. Stinger, having been at the job hunt for a while, knows shit out instead. And I'm like cheering, like, yeah, Sting. But it really is. They go back to headlocks and some crowd work. It's just a whole lot of that. Nothing to write home about, but it's Sting and Ray Trailer. Like, okay. At what point I write, oh, go ahead.
You know, it was a match that wouldn't have been out of place on a 1987 Saturday morning WCW show.
Yeah.
And exactly. That is both good and bad. You know, I was in 1987-88, Jim Crocker promotion is somewhat of a comfort food for me.
Yeah.
So, and this is when Bubba is emerging to the world. And he's getting presented as not a title threat per se, maybe in the UWF, but you know, he's a guy who could beat up anybody you like at any given time.
Yeah, he was a big dude. He was a big scary dude.
But he had a purpose. He was a bodyguard. He had a direction. And we saw the Big Boss Man come and go. And you know, seeing Bubba here, just you know, it this is why it was good for him to go back to WWF in the end.
Yep, absolutely. Good. Well, again, well said. I was going to say, because in my notes, I just can't get over the fact that that's Ray Trailer wrestling in like a full suit because they didn't know what else to do with him. And like eventually they make him like a guardian angel, which is like terrifying in its own right. It's all just weird. And it's unfortunate because I like Big Boss Man. I didn't know any better. I was a kid. I didn't know ACAB yet. Don't cancel me. Yeah, now I know ACAB. ACAB includes Big Boss Man, yes.
Hashtag nails was right.
Yes. Abolition for nails. Justice for nails. Absolutely. And like, no, I agree with you. Like, this is just proof that he needs to get out of here. And I did write down God's love her, an old wrestle granny in the front row in like a black and rhinestone sweater, was on her feet on the rails yelling at Ray about how much of a disappointment he is to his mother. And I love wrestling. I love it so much because those people exist and they still exist. And like,
so about her.
Oh, yes.
I read up on the show before watching it. And the rumor at the time was that she was a former wrestler.
Really?
Name wasn't given, but she was supposedly a former wrestler who would get contacted to attend shows in the Knoxville area. But she was friends with the Armstrong family, who, if you're an older listener, you might recall them as one of the dominant family trees in Southern wrestling. You know, Jim Cornette knew her, apparently, which, oh,
yeah,
I feel bad for her, but you know, probably got
some games. Yeah, but he also knows everybody. I was gonna say, listeners will recognize Armstrong family from week ago. A couple of brothers showed up actually on Nitro like last week, so funny you say that. But yeah, that, so she was absolutely like a plant is what you're saying.
You know, I'm who knows what kind of coaching went on, but I'm sure they happily, I you know, I don't think she needed much notes, you know.
Yeah, she knew what to do. Yeah, exactly, she knew what to do to get into it. That's so great. I love it. I'm like, I would be fine with that. I just love that the wrestle granny still, because even if she was, you know, some level of coaching, I've been at the local shows when I was like 10, and that lady exists on the local level where she is, and she is chain smoking because it's a VFW hall 90s, you know, and like it's just exquisite. So seeing it on TV, Sting eventually catches Ray in a driver. And then he goes to his knees instead right in front of the camera, and the whole match was worth it for me for that spot. It was very pretty. Mongo then says that he will stand in Bobby, and Bobby says don't make him a pinata censor. And in that note, I imagined what would be in Bobby Heenan's pinata. I'm guessing IOUs in small bottles of whiskey at this point.
The empty contents of a mini bar.
Yeah, the empty contents of a mini bar and his hopes and dreams and little notes saying, like, I'm a gorilla and like drawing of a banana. Oh, poor Bobby. In the ring, though, Sting hits a big crossbody, which will never not make me laugh because you could just win crossbody back then. It's 90s wrestling. It's still existing. Like you said, in Saturday morning 80s, like WCW, this match would have been perfect. And it was not a bad match. It just didn't fit with everything around it.
Well, like you said, Bischoff is trying really hard, but you can see all these conflicts coming into play. He's got he's trying to drum up this new modern show. He's got these somewhat dated booking for his matches. He's trying to satisfy the corporate side with this NASCAR tie-in, and none of it's really coalescing.
Yeah, no, and none of it's hitting, and it does kind of make the Billionaire Ted stuff hit a little harder. It's kind of wild because, like, I mean, that's the war of it all, right? Like, that's why the whole point of me wanting to rewatch this is, like, I don't remember a lot of the context for this because I was so young. Now I want to go watch this as a grown-up, knowing everything and being like, oh my god, it was all so much more bloodthirsty than I realized, like, with the context. Like, you think they're joking, and no, this was, like, beef. Like, this was beef. Speaking of beef, Hawk and Animal, come on. Big meaty men slapping me. Luger immediately gets defensive, like, when you catch a dark sneaking food off the table, because he knows what he did. I'm loving this era of the asshole Luger, like, being sneaky behind the good guy Sting's back to get wins. I didn't like it at first. I am totally sold now. He doesn't really let Sting get a word in, though, thankfully. Animal instead gets some Chicago-on-Chicago violence against Lex. And when Lex asks for backup, Sting just throws him under the bus. I'm going to call it class solidarity, Art. He says that, well, you're from the white-collar portion of Chicago. These guys are from the street. I was like, fuck yeah, Stinger.
I mean, that's a tremendous line from Sting, who... Yeah. Sting is the e-girl, Lex is the podcaster boyfriend.
Yep.
And this is one of those times that the dynamic really came out. This is a segment that has really aged well for fans of my generation, especially, because it was the kind of character stuff you didn't see a lot from Sting. Like, you've seen him mad. You've seen him competitive. You never really see him annoyed.
Yeah.
He's just annoyed at his crappy friend. And a lot of us have had our crappy friend.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it keeps putting him in this place where he doesn't want to be. Now he's, I mean, you really don't want to be in a situation looking at Hawk and Animal too. Like, these guys will kill you. And, like, they tap off the weird to tap that off. Hawk threatens to normal stuff. Agreed. This promo aged really well. Because it also sets up the Chicago Street Fight at Uncensored, which is, like, where it was going. But it was all really well done as far as promos from this era, in my opinion. These tend to be all over the place. This seemed like it had a really good beginning, middle, and end. Everyone was playing their part. And I really appreciated that. And it's like, everyone here is great. You know, they did it. Everyone here is great. But this is one of the first, like, little Mean Gene talking twos in the show that I've really enjoyed. And then they tell us before that we go to break, it's Lex Luger versus Not the Ultimate Warrior. We are so sorry. We lied about getting Ultimate Warrior. This guy's called Renegade. Same bit, but he loves Hogan. It's the same. It's totally the same.
I'm watching this match, I felt horrible for Renegade, the human being. He described his unfortunate gimmick really well. And, you know, what a bad situation that had to be as a talent at the time. You're the switch in the bait and switch.
Yep.
You're limited in the ring and getting smashed over Arn Anderson for the World Television Championship. So that's just, you know, setting you up for all sorts of resentment. And during the match, Bischoff knows that he's improved. He's been training more. And you can see it in this match. This is one of the best Renegade matches maybe I've ever seen. It's a low bar, but you've got to give him some credit.
Oh, and I absolutely, I was going to say, like, Eric brought it up and you brought it up before then. And I've brought it up before in the last Renegade match we saw. He had a great match. They wanted him to be this awful thing, and he ended up like doing Warrior better than Warrior, basically. And it really is just, it just sucks that all he ends up getting is this. And we know where it ends up going. So, like, it's another one of those things where, like, it's so hard to see it and know what they were doing and know how it went, especially when he is showing improvement. In the match itself, it was a better one because it's like a match where you're playing two of the same characters in a game wearing different skins. Like, they looked just perfectly matched. You know, they're both just be big, no sell, repeat. And it's a good match. It's big, meaty dudes slapping meat. Like, I'm into that. Like, that's some of my favorite shit. It feels like that older style where, like, where they were kind of coming out of, transitioning out of at this time as we get more and more cruiserweight action. But it was really a great match. And I do feel bad for Renegade.
More, yeah, so that's the guy who, you know, even 6 years earlier would have had a good run in a smaller territory.
Mm-hmm.
Would have been able to maybe create his own take on the character rather than being the Tesco Warrior you described here.
Yeah, Kirkland Ultimate Warrior. Yeah, absolutely. And it really just comes down to what this was done to him. Like, that gimmick was done to him, and there's nothing he could really do about it at that point. So it's one of those great could have been, should have been, would have beens, you know. More disappointments of the 90s. Mongo does a 90s transphobia on commentary, talking about Ric Flair came out and dragged the last year at Uncensored as a disguise. Mongo wants it to be shameful, but Bobby Heenan, bless his heart, truly, says, well, what's the problem? He looked good. It's a nice dress. It was a disguise. It worked. And, you know, I was just like, see? Sometimes he can be awful, but more often than not, bless you, Bobby. That's our weasel. It's good stuff. Eric calls the WWF out again, saying that Lex was part of their so-called new generation and now he's here. And he's just doing anything he can to bring, you know, some excitement to it. And again, it's like you said, the commentary just really sucks. They're doing way too much of not commentating. And it used to be mostly a Raw problem. As far as this watching along, it's getting worse on Nitro. Eric is picking up more of that. And it's going to work, obviously, but in the meantime, I do think this match would have been served better by them caring a little, you know. It is kind of where I landed on it. They seem to just not care.
Yeah, I mean, you can say it across the board.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Really.
And it's I think this is where you can see why Tony Schiavone had a renaissance, and mm-hmm. that once he takes on the number one announcer duty, it really does meet the moment.
Yep. Because he knows what to do. He's like, you know, like, you guys got this amazing talent out here and you're doing nothing for him. And Tony knows what he's doing, like JR does, or like you are out here to compliment them. You're not out here to make it about you. You're out there to better paint the picture for people. And I've often said with like good commentary, it's almost like an accessibility thing. Like, I could listen to wrestling matches with good commentary like a radio play and mm-hmm. be fine. If they're doing it right, that's how it should work. This not so much. It's just sad. And eventually they end it, you know, the Jimmy Hart comes out and it eventually what we knew was going to happen. He fucks with Renegade. The ref misses it and puts him in the torture rack to end it. And then you talk about fucking frustrated Sting energy. This was wild because Sting comes out to scold him about Jimmy, and Luger tries to act like innocent and like, I don't know, what do you mean? And he raises Renegade's hand like, see, he can win. That's fine. We're cool. But Sting like gets in his face and like corners him off screaming in a way that would be truly terrifying. But it's kind of funny because it's Lex making silly faces. And then like, it can sort of cut it a little bit for me, but Stinger's really given it today. Like Sting won Nitro for me, I guess is what I'm saying. As far as this episode goes, like he showed the most improvement over what has been kind of lackluster promos for me in the past. But then coming back from commercial, sorry, I all of a sudden got a cat on me. It might be edited out. Hopefully she doesn't bite me this time. Back from commercial to Harlem Heat's theme song. Come on now, everybody pops. Love that shit. Versus the Road Warriors, and for the first time this week, I'm compelled to say this reeks of banger. I am excited.
For me, this match was a kind of passing the torch I didn't realize at the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you followed along in the late 80s, the Warriors were forces of nature. They were frequently hulking over their opponents. It wasn't until 89, I think, you saw the skyscrapers come in and beat one of the first teams that was physically taller than them. But by this point in the 90s, you know, if Harlem Heat is practically towering over them, and they're not even giants.
No, they're just big dudes. So like it's really kind of it's showing a changing of the game. Well said. And like to me, it was absolutely like the epitome of like the big meaty power guys. I still get excited for Legion of Doom. I'm a simple creature. Like I like when Ooh What a Rush. You know, like I grew up. What those guys are some of the things that got me into wrestling, because like them on the cover for the VHS tapes. I was like, how do you not want? What the fuck is this? You see these dudes with spikes and shit. I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to find out. so like they drew me in. And this is just, they're all facing off, threatening kisses like the big bads do in wrestling, like in their faces. And it starts with Booker and Hawk, who are theoretically the smaller of each team. to your point, like that kind of goes that you said the smaller guys first. So like you have the powerhouses in waiting, and it's like, okay, but like, how do you do that here? Everyone's fucking huge and terrifying. But it works out. Hawk does his classic, like, the slowed neck wrench sit down neck breaker, and like I don't know about you, but I like instantly was just so happy. Like that was like a go-to video game wrestling move for me. That's like the neck breaker.
I mean, it's the rude awakening. That's one of the but it also shows that used to be an MDK finish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it's a transition, or now it's something. It's a good mid-match spot.
Yep. Yeah, and to kind of talk back to the winning with a splash too.
Yep.
Holy shit! Hey, I've loved this liminal space of things changing with this. It's really wonderful seeing everything kind of move over. Like I said, passing of the torch. I'm sorry. If I keep like randomly getting quiet, the cat is really trying to make this as difficult as possible. I'll leave that one in. She's our producer. Damn it. So, yeah, Hawk does classic Hawk neckbreaker, the Rude Awakening. Bobby says the Road Warriors were bouncers and they throwed people into the bars, which it wouldn't be Monday Night Fake Fights without good old Bobby Heenan lines. They've been together all their lives, they said. One got flunked out of school and the other one quit school so they could stay together. Oh, good stuff. And this is fantastic. Eric again points towards what would be a better storytelling by mentioning Booty Man being a spy in Dungeon of Doom. And Mongo assures us Pepe is ready to rumble. And I'm gonna miss Pepe. I'm again a simple creature. It's a little dog in leather. I would be scared. further evidence though of Hawk being amazing, he takes like, I don't know if you saw it, like just the stiffest right hand to the face from Stevie Ray and does like the slow fall back sell.
Oh yeah.
That shit. That's the shit where I like get the deep contented sigh of like that. I miss selling like that. Like, you know, it's supposed to look like it hurt a little. I love wrestling. Cause that probably hurt a little.
It's become an ongoing question. Like, who is teaching how to execute a good work strike?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because I try not to shit on any particular modern Fed, but Fed, if you will, they got into that place with the Performance Center where they're teaching them how to do the motions, but not how to like do the shit, you know? And so to your point, who is teaching people how to do that? Because it used to be one of the first things you learn. I often bring up Have a Nice Day. Foley's first book is what initially taught me that it was fake. Like, that's what finally broke kayfabe for me. When I first read that, I was like, because Mick wouldn't lie to me, you know? Foley is good. So he talked about getting in the ring with Dominic DiNucci the first time and being saying, "Oh, I know how to throw a forearm," and doing the stomp and not really hitting him with it. And DiNucci being like, "The fuck is that?" Like throwing him in the corner and just beating the shit out of him. Be like, "Don't you ever do that in my ring." And realizing that, like, to really do it, like, there's gotta be contact. You can't ghost every punch. You know, like it to make to you don't get those moments like we're talking about where Hawk like just looked like he was knocked out. That's fantastic. That's just good working. In the middle of all this, though, Bush Bischoff lets us know that the winner of this will in fact be the number one contenders for the tag belts. Breaking news that he booked last week. According to Eric nowadays, he lets us know it was all in advance. The match continues to fuck though. Animal gets his double clothesline in. He goes down hard. Wonderful, but. Confusion as to who is legal. They mention it, and immediately I'm like, "Oh no, there's fuckery aboot." The ref gets distracted. Booker does the Harlem Hangover, that like 450 leg drop.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, never. They just what the fuck? And like people talk about too much flippy shit. I'm like, no. Pay attention to the classics. Like he's a heavyweight doing this shit. Like he was proof that a heavyweight could always do this shit. It's just Vince didn't want them to, so he wouldn't let them. Bullshit. That's my rant. Okay. It was beautiful. But ref's distracted, like I mentioned. So no good on that. They end up Animal comes in, does some cheating, Hawk gets the win. Woo. Fun little contenders match. That was really sick. I very much enjoyed that.
Again, it was good meat and potatoes type stuff.
Nothing to write home about, but like really
It
great, and it's always just good to see them.
but you know, it was striking. Again, it was striking to see the Warriors on the back foot as much as they were here.
Yeah, they and like
They
you
had
said
to
in the
cheat to
passing the
win.
torch. Yeah, and that passing the torch. Yeah, they had to cheat to win. They were really making them the heels, even though like I feel like this is this time where they want to make Harlem Heat the heels all the time, but like it's getting to the point where the crowd's not going to let it stand much longer because they're just so good. And I love that shit. There's
And
nothing nothing I love more than that.
well, not and they weren't just good, but you know, there's something to be said for watching a talent theoretically grow up, mature in front of you in a promotion.
Yeah, very
And
much.
even a crowd like this, I think, cannot help but appreciate seeing Harlem Heat move their way up the ranks year after year.
Yeah, and they just keep getting better. And I mean Booker T rides it all the way to the Hall of Fame deservedly on that song, no, nonetheless. I will never get over that. They never had to, it's like the Nitro theme. They never had to change it. It was perfect from the get go. But that was awesome. And now we come back from commercial to the Nature Boy and the six man tag. Dungeon of Horsemen is what I'm calling it. Taskmaster Rick and Arn. And they are going to defeat the Mega Booty Powers, Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan, and his best buddy Ed Leslie. So like this is the debut, and it went better match than I was expecting given my cynicism about all things Hogan. It was a six man tag. Rick comes out looking amazing naturally, with Elizabeth and women also looking amazing naturally. Rick or Arn, I mean, looks completely out of place as usual, like a members only jacket. I just love him. And then, you know, American made Hulkamania. He's got his buddies. Eric says that, what I said, the booty man, the macho man, and the man himself. And I again have to commend that was not bad considering like what he was given with the whole situation. Like, that was a pretty solid line read, Eric. I'll give you that.
You know, he also accidentally called them the Mega Powers at one point, which, you know, how fast did he get that letter from Jerry McDivitt at that point, I wonder?
Yeah, I was gonna say like that. That's Brooke mentioned. Oh, is Vince litigious? I'm like, oh, he can be. Or Sage mentioned what too. Like, is Vince litigious? I'm like, for me, no. Yeah, Vince doesn't know I exist, and that's good. but like, yeah, no. Jerry McDivitt is terrifying. Yeah, like that man terrifies me. I mean, we'll get more and more into that as we go along. Because yeah, he's gonna sh be showing his head more and more. Oh, the match itself though starts off with chaos, as makes you know makes sense. Eric tells us they'll be staying past the hour if need be. They're already pushing the 2 hour Nitro at this point, I'm guessing, which is you know it's inevitable. For some reason, just as the match starts, I had to take note of it. Kimberly walks out with flowers and they just kind of never talk about it again. So that happened. I feel bad for her. Again, continually, because it's, she's stuck between DDP and Mark Merrow, and that just feels like it to the point you're running in to try to be like, can I be a horsewoman?
This was her breaking away from that, or seemingly,
yeah, like, trying to,
which, you know, on the one hand, fair, on the other, you can do better.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, girl, have some like respect for yourself. The Nature Boy, no, like, you know, because like Elizabeth is just, you know, doing the best she can. Woman is clearly up to something. Like woman's like there, and everyone's like, yeah, we have woman. I'm like, you don't have woman. No one has woman. Woman has woman. So like, I can respect the hustle for woman. So like, what are you getting out of this, Kimberly? Like, you get to hang out with Rick? That's not great. So needless to say, it doesn't go very far. Hopefully, you know, we'll see. I'm sure it'll go more, but he's trying. Mostly this match though, you know, like Flair tags Arn in, it's like, okay, or Flair gets tagged in from Arn, like, okay, you get a good match out of him. He's shaking his butt at me. So he tries, and it's just more butt shaking. And again, it's Ed Leslie, this bit worked. It's just, he's like a man out of time, you know?
And, the whole match is out of time.
Yeah, the whole match is, it's a match out of time. And some of them are trying, like Macho's leaning into his unhinged hoss routine, you know, he's like going after everybody. But like Hogan's just, it's the way this match ended to me, I just cackled because it seemed so on point, where Booty Man gets the hot tag, which is a hell of a sentence. He proceeds to clean house, and in a bit that's just so great, he starts Irish whipping people into Hogan's boot for him. Like, brother, I'm not feeling it, dude. Can you just send the faces to the big boot, brother? Like, he's just laying back, let it happen, and he gets his pin back on Arn that way. And I was just like, this is, you know what? Wrap it in a bow. That's 10 out of 10. No notes. That was pretty great. And then that is like it. Like, that's the end of Nitro, basically. They after that, here comes the clusterfuck that I assumed was going to be the whole match. They clusterfuck and handcuff Hogan to the turnbuckles and whip him a little bit, which, again, see our last episode's discussion of wrestling is kink for further thoughts on this. we covered this last week. That's the end of Nitro. I'm not doing it again.
And just 3 months and one day later, Scott Hall shows up, and
oh my god,
you would never know this episode took place.
Yep, yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, I was like almost looking for, I was like, what are we, 3 months out? Holy crap. To that I say, Josie Riceman, I don't know if you're listening, but be on the lookout. I'm gonna be bothering you to be on that show, because I know it's a personal favorite. But the AO, you know why I'm here. you know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. I'm looking forward to that.
And it's worth noting again that this wasn't an original Bischoff concept. He lifted it from a New Japan angle.
Yep, the whole invasion thing. This was not original, once again. And like, I'm in Minneapolis, so I have to mention that what's his face? Vern Gagne likes to try to claim he came up with the NWO.
Oh, that was Greg. That was Greg.
That was good Greg. Son. It was Greg. One of them. One of the Gagne's. It's funny. One time I was having a medical procedure, listening to a podcast about that, giggling, and they're like, "What's going on?" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm giggling about the Gagne's," and they're like, "Oh yeah, Vern and Greg," and I'm like, "God damn, I am in Minneapolis, aren't I?" Jesus
Christ! Oh yeah, you still go watch the Bruiser back at the county fair?
Oh yeah, go see the matches. Yeah, and I'm like, damn it, like, you can't get away from it. I was like, "Do you have any idea how much those two suck?" No, they do not. I'm not going to say it because you're doing a medical procedure on me, so it will even be. But yeah, like, in reality, it was a stolen concept from New Japan, and where it worked super well, and it continues to be a really good idea when done correctly. I like the Death Riders thing going on right now in AEW, but I feel like it's starting to kind of lose focus of like what they're really going after. I feel like they need a Hogan in a
I
sense.
have a problem with the Death Rider story because the underpinnings were not there to begin with. I don't want to get off on that tangent right now. I have a question for you.
Oh, please do.
Let's assume Scott Hall and Kevin Nash decided to take a sabbatical instead.
Instead of switching.
Yeah. What do you think, or what how would you have booked WCW, let's say, going into that summer
Oh
instead?
God. I mean, how I
What to
would
you is the hot story right now?
right now there's pardon me. Right now, nothing. Right now they got nothing. So if it were me, knowing what I know, spoilers, Hogan's about to take some time off, I think for a movie or something. And when he's gone, the NWO show up, right? So if that doesn't happen, he's still going to be gone. I think in that place, they've already started talking about the Cruiserweight tournament. I think that I would lean harder into the Cruiserweight of it all with Hogan gone, and like really, like while he's gone, while he physically can't be there to rip the headset off of you and yell at you to drop a boot, you know, like. So like he's physically not there to interfere. While he's gone, introduce this new thing that is clearly the future of wrestling. You know what I mean? And that's probably the be only way without the NWO that they would have survived, in my opinion, because like what we're looking at now is not good. It's very not good. And but at the same time, that's if I'm booking, because in reality it's still Kevin Sullivan. And Kevin Sullivan booked the early NWO stuff. I gotta give, again, you don't love to, gotta give him credit. I don't know if he would have booked the Cruiserweight in that way, in a way that would have worked, you know, because it's he doesn't know what to do with it. And for the same reason, they're all these old guard guys. It's kind of Vince hitting the mark with the billionaire Ted stuff. Like they are this old guard guys, but the problem is that Vince is doing that too, just in a different way. And it's ends up all being projection. But yeah, without if they just took a sabbatical instead, I would have to really lay into the Cruiserweights and hope to God it worked, basically, because that's all they got. They don't have a big story. Yeah, you too. I think to your point. But yeah, that's a hell of a question. Fuck. And on that note, that's the end of Nitro. You mentioned earlier a juicy Raw. This is in fact a juicy Raw, where we're getting more and more juicy Raws, and it's exciting. They are revolutionary, forcing things on us for 50 years. First though, corny video package with the huge orchestrals, which I feel like it wants to hit my nostalgia button, if that makes sense, because like this is what it was like when I got into it. But like looking back on it, I'm like, this is just silly and corny.
The Taker
Like
Diesel stuff, yeah.
the Taker Diesel stuff, and also just the whole presentation of it with like the big like Joe Johnston trying to be John Williams. Like the whole video package of it was just very interesting. And also like we'll get to it with Diesel. I feel like Diesel's time is it, this is the episode I feel like where the clock starts to really
Oh, yeah.
tick for him. In the meantime, they do tell us that it is historical because Bret and Shawn are meeting in the ring, and I'm like, oh, is this what I think it is? Spoilers, it is. But first, Mayor Kane, Glenn Jacobs, everyone coming out to dental drills. I
Which, you know,
still,
again, wrestling as vocation,
yes.
and even at the time, I thought this was just so dumb.
Yeah, like it's not great. Like I can't thank you for affirming that for me, Art, that like someone who is old enough to be a little more aware at the time watching this going, are we being serious right now? And like, yeah, no, crowd also hates it. Like, so they're letting us know.
But that's, I mean, that's also, but the crowd hating it like this, and we'll see later on in the show, you can feel the energy there. It's shifting as opposed to what it would have been 10 years earlier.
No, good call, because it shows up in my notes later. A lot of the heat tonight isn't heel heat. It's fuck you, go home heat. Like, it's fuck you, I hate this heat. Like, it feels like that to me, at least.
Oh, I agree. This is the crowd like telling you this isn't boo, he's evil. It's, you don't want to see this.
Yeah, boo, this sucks. Yeah, and they bring to the point even they bring out Jake the Snake, and like some people seem kind of excited, but like I don't know if you, I'm getting good at catching this. I'm guessing a song license lapsed here because that's fake crowd noise. It does not match up to the excitement level that we're seeing. And like,
I mean, it could just be, you know, sweetening it.
Or just sweetening it. Yeah, because we know for sure it has been confirmed that they did that a lot when they transferred to the network, because like licenses on songs would get pulled. So they would have to put in a different song and then re-add in a cheering crowd. And it's getting to the point where watching a lot of this on Peacock, I'm starting to note.
Watching it now, I was struck that this is a really good Glenn Jacobs match.
Yeah. I saw that too. Like given all the stuff, like they're really loose. Like they're, I don't know if it's just that Glenn Jacobs is still really green yet, and that, and mixed with the fact that Jake is like clearly not doing well. But some of those hip tosses really sing, you know, like this is a really good match, like because they're really flying, you know. It doesn't look as well oiled, it looks more like a fight, and that's what I like about wrestling. and you go further back in the Fed, you get more of that basically. And this is very much a battle of the DDTs, the DDT versus the DDS. God damn it. I wonder how Britt Baker feels about this entire. I often ask, like, how does Britt feel about Dr. Isaac Yankum? Was this a
She's trying to escape that legacy with the DDS.
Yes, exactly.
DMD, sorry.
Yeah, to get the DMD instead of the DDS. I was like, is she aware? Like, is someday maybe I'll get a chance to be like, hey,
like if she ever negotiates with WWE, does Hunter like, hey, you're gonna be the daughter of Isaac Yankum.
Oh no. Okay, so this is how I know you are good WrestleSky folk art. The WrestleSky has a tendency to speak things into existence that make me go,
"Oh good."
Well, yeah, like as if they ever hear that, you know, he's like a hop, skip and a jump away. Like he's just waiting for someone to push him over that ledge. Oh my god, that's too much. All right, well, that's a possible title contender as far as title of the show. Mrs. DDS. God, Vince. So, yeah, gross. Both these guys, awesome, good shit. Jake is definitely, like I said, moving slow, and they instantly start not caring about this match. Vince calls in, or Goldust calls in. He warns us he's going to, and, like, okay, it's I'm sure it will be horrifyingly queerphobic and at the same time accidentally gay as hell, so I'm looking forward to that. It's becoming my favorite part of the show, how like straight these guys can act before it wraps back around and just a little gay. Razor jumped over that ledge last week to the point where it's just like holy shit, like you can't, did you, it was like the Tobias Funke, do you hear yourself when you talk, like did you like you just blew yourself, dude. But Mayor Kane calls for a DDT, which is, you know, clear. I'm like, okay, so this is going home. Jake does the Ric Flair grab the ropes to slip it, which was pretty standard and awesome and classy and good. He gets the DDT on Kane instead. That's that. Eric told us this is what was going to happen. they cut to a kid just like super curious about the snake, and it just feels weird because like they keep trying to make it kid, like there's kids here, and it's like increasingly the show is not that. And it always freaks me out. Like it's like a jump scare. But I'm pretty sure this is this might actually be the end of Dr. Yankum. I feel like Jake really laid him out, and sooner than later he will be fake Diesel.
Well, and, you know, it's a living.
Yeah, it's a living. The fucking title of Glenn Jacobs' autobiography, like doing just enough to just be there and be around and get in the Hall of Fame for it. Another Ultimate Warrior promo without having yet seen Warrior back. I have to take note. This is like the third time this has happened. And I don't remember how this goes, but I feel like I'm not going to believe it until Hellwig is blowing wind in the ring. Like, you can keep telling me this is happening, but I don't remember if it does eventually actually show up again or not.
And, you know, I remember at the time I was watching this and I was like, really? Because I was,
do we even want this?
Yeah, and WrestleMania 6, let's say, you know, but by then I'd already seen Warrior in World Class as the Dingo Warrior with a mustache and the makeup,
yeah,
and acting relatively well adjusted, you know, and then he arrives in WWF and stops just short of hawking brain juice at the audience.
Folks,
but here again, but you know, here again, it's that collision of, you know, hey, here's an old favorite, and trotting out these kids to hype up the return, without any sign of, and I know old Jim would have hated this for Evolution, but God. you see here again, much like Big Bubba earlier. When Warrior jumped to the other promotion, it did freshen him up.
Yeah,
it just took a bit for him to figure that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, that's when he like switched his name and from Ultimate Warrior to just Warrior to get around Vince's shit, and ended up like changing his name legally, which is one of my favorite things, because like, I don't listen to him much anymore, but I did used to listen to like the Conrad verse shoot interview stuff. And one of my most delighted things about Eric Bischoff is that I don't know if he extends this to my trans siblings and I, but he will not dead name Warrior. Like, he's very adamant. He won't call him Jim. He won't call him Ultimate Warrior. He's like, no, this man changed his name to Warrior, and was very adamant about it, and I respect it. And I was like, okay, Eric, again, this is the episode where I give Eric his flowers, I guess. Because he refuses to call him anything other than that and respect that. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna give you that. Like, you do. Again, I don't know if you extend that to other people who might be asking, but like, further proof, kids, the pronouns aren't that hard. If Eric Bischoff can fucking do it for Jim Hellwig, you can figure it out. But holy hell, we come back in from commercial, and Bob Holly is still here, much to Eric's chagrin. It's the new Bob Holly game. Is he the jobber, or are they feeding him a jobber? This is kind of what I've been playing. And then they tell us it's Diesel, and Bob is probably having a very frustrating night. Bob, I was born an asshole Holly, basically.
Well, you know, and like I said earlier, this existence was an upgrade. Years later, once Smoky Mountain became more available online, you know, I went through that run just to see for completion purposes, really.
Yeah, naturally. That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing here, Art.
and there is a young Bob Holly in pink and black.
No shit.
As Hollywood Bob Holly. With that same old accent telling you how he was hanging out in Beverly Hills.
Exquisite. No, you're selling me, Bob. I believe you.
And now I'm like, okay, maybe I would take the Sparky plug check too at that point.
Yeah, why not? And I mean, he's doing his job in what is not Kevin's not helping him a lot. Again, this is the clock has started ticking here for Big Kev, because like, Diesel comes out and most of the crowd looks bored to me, really. Like, no one, this match has zero heat at all. But I felt like this match had very little. Well, to begin with, it had zero heat. So I'll get there. Bob's trying, though. He does some huge sells. He like really makes it look like Diesel's tossing him. Diesel has a paranoid moment where he checks the ring because of where Taker popped up out of it, and that popped me. I'm not gonna lie. I was like, that's pretty funny. Like, oh fuck, man. I'd be scared of him too. He's a lich. But outside of outside of that, he just keeps eating Bob while the crowd boos him and is like screaming shit talk at Diesel. Like, they, and I don't, like I said, I don't think this is heel heat. I think this is fuck you, go home heat. And like, I know this because then when Bob makes his comeback, so I contradict myself. There is heat here. When Bob makes his comeback and goes for like an oh yeah at the crowd, no change. They just keep booing all the way through.
Yep, I noticed that as well.
Yep, like we're it's not that we love you, it's that all of this sucks. The entire match, we hate this. So they come back from break, and almost mercifully, Diesel is like mid-boot on Bob for the three. Like, just end it. He continues like he's scared.
It ended up being a funny transition because they go to break, and Vince is, can Bob Holly come back against Big Daddy Cool Diesel?
No.
Nope. Immediately.
Yeah. No, he cannot. Thank you for answering that. Great timing. That's great. I will not give Kevin Dunn credit, even if he was responsible for that. Some things on this show will not change. But yeah, Vincent Waller so far, I'd say they're behaving, but still sucking, which is itself an upgrade. Big Kev thinks he's in the clear, but he gets like almost to the back and Taker's gong hits and the light goes out. It hits again. The light comes up. Taker's in the ring. Ye old magic. And like that was fun, but then they immediately do it again. And Diesel runs to the ring and the lights go out and they come back up and he's in by himself in the ring confused. And then they go out again. I'm like, okay, this is personally, I was like, you killed a good bit here. Like this started out really cool. Now it's a bit much. But he Undertaker comes on the video screen, threatens Diesel with mind games. Because who I am as a person, John Lennon starts singing in my head. mind games. I was like, yes, we're getting that in your house. Awesome. It's good. That's I'm going to be listening to that a lot. The crowd's into it. They love Taker as much as they hate Kev. All is right with the world. So like they're onto something there. I'll give you that. It's not for me, I feel like, because I'm like really done with Diesel at this point, but like, and Undertaker for that point, for that matter, he's ready for that big resurgence that he has coming to him soon, you know? Like it's kind of getting a little stale. We need a Mick Foley about it. which, spoilers. But we come back to the actual jobber match. We had generic racist Japanese wrestler music for Shinobi, and as has become kind of the thing with the jobber matches, I was like, okay, I'm gonna look up these guys, and see if they stuck around, where they end up going. This guy looks cool as fuck. Unfortunately, it's just Al Snow under a new mask.
Yep. Al Snow under a mask with the Orient Express music.
Yep, that's the same with the Orient Express music. Just their generic go-to. These people are some type of Asian or from the American Samoa, and we're going to use this. Just fucking Vince. But this, he tried this before as Avatar back in episode 8. It was horrible then. And now he's fighting Ahmed. And like these are two guys that are both green as hell. So like this might be a weird match. Thankfully though, they immediately stopped caring. Like as far as the production, Ahmed throws him out and Goldust calls in. Now this whole match is about Goldust. He calls in and does like the heavy breathing ASMR over the telephone and says that Marlena has directed him to read a poem about Roddy Piper. I immediately just strap myself in. like, how is this gonna go?
So did he, apparently.
Oh, this is, folks, if I had the soundboard, this would be the bwah, 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 bwah. Because, yes, strap in and strap on, as we like to say at the show. He goes for it. He does a little rhyme about how Roddy must have a huge dick, and he is hot, and do you want to fuck? But like Dr. Seuss, it's brilliant.
He put him over.
We'll get there. I'm looking forward to it. This whole thing is like me looking forward to WrestleMania 12, and this continues that. Like, fuck yeah, Goldust. In the meantime, Ahmed Johnson then hits just this. He's just, I missed most of this match because I was just freaking out about how awesome Goldust is. But he hits a huge spine buster. Vince ignores the ASMR like it never happened. But then eventually adds, like, those comments from Goldust are clearly messed up, right? I wasn't listening. Ahmed hits the Tiger Bomb.
I'll need to listen to him again to be sure, pal.
Sure. Oh, God. The flags were there. Ahmed sends Al back to the drawing board. is basically it. That was all that was background for Goldust.
While we're here, I do want to say your discussion with Shay about Goldust as a trans trailblazer, a transblazer, if you will.
With Sage. Yeah.
That was a great bit of analysis that I hadn't considered before.
Thank you. It's, you know, I'm not a trained analyzer. A lot of that just is lived experience of like, you know, we talked about last week, I got emotional. Like, he really meant a lot to me as a closeted queer kid. And I really wonder if he realizes that, because like, yeah, he, and it shows in his first Raw. So they debuted him. His first match was In Your House 4 against Marty Jannetty, the captain of Team Tassels. And, it was a really great match, and they were really laying on thick that shit. But then when the very next night he comes out for Raw, already in the crowd, and it's a live Raw because it's the night after pay-per-view. That's how they did it back then. So it was live. The night after, there's four clearly gay guys in like jeans and white Gold Dust t-shirts wearing the full makeup with the wigs, holding a like Fuck Yeah Gold Dust sign. And I was just like, we've always been here. Like, we were always there. They did not realize, like, they just didn't care to. They thought they think that their base is one thing, but really it was absolutely there. So like, thank you for enjoying that, because like, that's a lot of where this show came from, is me getting to get online and meet other queer wrestling fans, and us kind of going like, yeah, this affected us.
Go ahead. Watching Lucha growing up, there were always exoticos.
Mm-hmm. I talked to Brooke a little bit about exoticos when she was on.
So as a cishet dude, just kind of trying to keep up.
Congrats, you're the first one. Woo 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 woo. Hey.
You know, there was, I'd always been cognizant of queerness in wrestling, as some people just kind of were, you know.
Yeah.
We look at it, you know, certainly you take it all the way back to Gorgeous George and all that, but it, you know, in 80s Mexico, there was Bello Greco, Sergio Lacmoso, Rudy Reina, and I mean, they were clearly queer men, either in kayfabe or in their personal lives.
Yeah.
Who wrestled? I mean, but they could wrestle. There was always the kiss spot and you know, some gay panic stuff going on. But they were always wrestling. They were never dismissed as talent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that makes sense very muchly. And that's really great to know, because I think of the most famous wrestler from my general area of where I grew up. Is Hornswoggle, actually, believe it or not. Yeah, and so like, I remember watching PBS late at night when Dylan's Backyard Wrestling would show up, and it's just their tapes of them doing backyard wrestling. And that's kind of what happened to Dylan getting in with Vince, is Vince is like, well, this is the comedy act where you bite the butt and do the thing, and that's it. But like, Dylan could wrestle. Like Dylan could like actually go. He was trained by Ken Anderson, who's from Green Bay. Yeah. So like, that's how he got in, was that he trained with Ken, and because Ken was out of Green Bay. That's why his finisher when he's in the Indies was the Lambeau Leap, that like rolling senton. So like, it, I watched it happen to him in real time, because we went to high school around the same age group. So like, he got like 2 years after I graduated, all of a sudden this kid I knew from like different school district is a wrestler like on WWE, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I knew he could wrestle, but what I saw was Vince putting that on him. So it's that really pleases me to know that like, it was at least understood and appreciated, the exoticos, that like these guys can actually work, you know, because you don't get that in American wrestling.
You know, and certainly we've gone on to see now Pimpinela Escarlata rightly be feted as a legend, you know, and both in Mexico and the U.S. You know, it was remarkable even in Lucha Underground, which had, well, it had its own issues. You know, I like the show, but it had its own issues. But even there, Pimpinella was never demeaned. She was never treated as a tragic figure. You know, she was just as much of a luchadora as everybody else. I have a question for you.
Yeah, please.
Did you ever watch the Cassandra movie?
I did.
What did you think?
I briefly brought it up to Brooke when she mentioned covering Lucha in Tijuana, because I was like, well, the Cassandra movie, he worked in Tijuana and like had that, and possible again Patreon stuff if we still want to do that. Rey Mysterio Sr., Rey's uncle, was involved with the making of that movie and actually had a part in it as a different character, but his was also a character in the movie. Like, Rey Mysterio Sr. is one of the luchas that Cassandra was working around. I liked that movie a lot. I think it was very dramatized, obviously, and like they were really trying to, but it's, I don't know, because I don't know as much about the cultural difference. I kind of have to assume that it's different than like American filmmaking, where like it's the accuracy was less important than getting that story right as far as what the story had to say. And I feel like it did a good job with that, as far as like getting across how big a deal it was that Cassandra was doing this. And like how big a deal it was that he was able to show Exoticos, which was something that, even though I knew what Lucha was, I never didn't know what a fucking Exotico was. You didn't see that in America. So like the fact that he was able to get that out on a wider national global scale at all was like a fucking amazing. And they kind of had to, you know, play with the accuracies a little bit to really get that across. I know some people really hated it. I thought it was good enough. You know, it was an amazing movie. No. Did it tell the story, I think, in a really good way? Is to the best of my knowledge, yes. And I thought it was really moving. And it is one of the things that brought about the show, in the sense that I originally was going to do a show that wasn't about the Monday Night Wars, but just about wrestling concepts in general. And seeing that movie while also spending a lot of time thinking about Goldust, I started to see the similarities, you know, and realizing that Goldust was just doing the Exotico thing, but he didn't realize that that's what he was doing. But like that's all he was doing. He was doing the Cassandra thing, where he was pushing it further and then still winning. And like that's what at least as far as the film says, is what really did it for Cassandra. Is like, yeah, I'm supposed to be the comedy and be the jobber basically, but I'm not going to let you. I'm going to make them love me so much that you can't have me be the heel and the loser, because they'll revolt. And like that's essentially how Goldust gets over. It's like it was supposed to be a punishment, but he's like, I'm going to make all these fuckers love me for being a weird little guy, and it worked.
Not like what his dad did a few years earlier.
Yeah, basically in a different way. Yeah, like if I can't be what an athlete's supposed to look like he says, hiney a little too big, belly a little too big, you know, I'm gonna make you realize that I'm bad and make you know that I'm bad. And like that's what Dustin did. And God, I'm again to date the show, he just announced that he re-signed a multi-year deal with AEW, and I'm just so happy. Like anytime, like I don't even care if he's like not doing matches a lot. I just like knowing Dustin has work, you know.
He's also been announced for the big Tokyo Dome on the 5th.
Really?
Yeah, him and Guevara are defending against the House of Torture.
Oh my God. Okay. They just had a great match on Final Battle against a team that I don't really love, the Kirkland brand, Wyatt Six. But yeah, you know, people tried to give me shit for that opinion, and then I found like this huge video essay about how that guy used to just do Randy Orton's bit in the indies, and like, so like his entire career has just been like trying to be WWE guys in a way that's can't get him sued. And like, that made me, they just got rid of all of my goodwill towards the reading of that group, you know?
Yeah, in Vince's defense, he has claimed that, like, I think either Wyatt himself vouched for him at one point.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, you know,
but the criticism is not unearned, I don't feel. But yeah, to bring it back to Dustin here.
Yeah.
You know, I guess he was always, I thought Goldust 1.0
yeah
was an exotical bit.
Yeah.
But listening to the phone call this week, I was like, wow, he really pulled that off on television. Even
yep.
Tate.
Yep. Like, that'd be a hard thing to do, and no pun intended, but yeah, no, he did. Yeah, he absolutely did it, and walked that line, and like, yeah, no, this is will forever be a fuck yeah Goldust episode. I'm looking forward to having to cringe at the blackface eventually, though, because it's the 90s and they all fuck up. You cannot not have heroes in wrestling. That's the underlying message of this show. It's very hard to have heroes in wrestling. But hey, that's a good transition, too, because Mick Foley is here talking about heroes in wrestling. My other one, besides Dustin, when I was a kid, is very much Mick, because, again, you can hear, you get to just be a weird little guy. Like, you get to have your full Mankind gear and a pet rat named George and do a little monologue and end it with "Mommy, leave the light on, I'm coming home," an obvious Ozzy Osbourne reference. I love him. Like, holy shit. He hasn't even shown up yet, and he's changed the game.
And, you know, the story from the first book about how he got to be Mankind and not, you know, the mutilator character Vince had in mind for him, that's remarkable in and of itself. Yep. How far back have you gone back and watched, like, early Cactus Jack?
I have. I did that when I was younger. When I got, because like what we're watching now, I hadn't quite started watching live wrestling yet. But when I instantly fell in love with Mick Foley. So when he did the Faces of Foley, I watched all that go down live, and I was like, who's this Cactus Jack person? And thankfully, we were now to the point of the internet where tape trading had turned into Daily Motion. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Early
Daily Motion. So I went online and destroyed so many desktops with viruses, learning everything I could about this Cactus Jack fella. I went as him for Halloween one year. I hit the double arm DDT on a friend of mine dressed as Mike Myers in front of like trick-or-treaters. Like, I loved Cactus Jack. It was a problem. So needless to say, I am very jazzed that Mankind's showing up. And it's like a higher point of the show, immediately followed by Raw QVC, which is, and the Raw band. They did show the Raw band, which is still happening. I do have to take note of that, because that it's been at least a month now where they're still going live music with Doc Hendricks. Yeah, huh? Sure.
Wow, was that ever an illustration of how hard up for? I mean, we know now Vince had barely come out of the steroid trial by this point.
Yeah.
But you know, just the need to fill time on a show like this and Todd Pettingill's good at it, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the QVC segment, it's such an odd duck today.
It is. They have found a better way of doing it. It's one of the things I've mentioned on the show before, too, where, like, you notice that a lot of the stuff that feels like blatant product placement and stuff that we complain about modern Fed was always there. It was just slightly different. And the Raw QVC it happens at least once a show. It's always painful. It has led to some real fun wonderings of just how much they were charging for this shit. The WrestleMania shirts at $18 is actually pretty solid compared to like previous shirt prices. Like, they were selling like t-shirts for like $30 and 96 money And like, apparently I'm really good at figuring out the exchange rate, because I guessed right at about $60 modern money for a t-shirt. Like, are you high? Like, what the fuck? Like,
well, Vince paying for the lawsuit?
Yeah, right. Well, yes. Well, Vince said he can do as much cocaine as he wants and not get hooked to the stuff. So $18 for this shirt is kind of proven that. Also, the sizing, I had to take note. They come in small, medium, large, extra large, and jumbo. As a jumbo American, happily jumbo Garrick Taylor, the disrespect. Get fucked. Come on. Ow. That's over quickly, thankfully. But it means Vince is in the ring introducing his favorite action figure, Shawn Michaels. The people seem to really love him. They find the one lady who looks bored, and I noted that it's the same lady who looked just as bored about Diesel. And once again, I wonder, is it a plant?
They found her just as Lawler was trying to put over how much the people love him.
Yeah.
They cut to her.
And it's like, that's a little on the nose. It's like, but maybe she's just having a bad night. Who knows?
Michael's, this crowd, this fan base has seen Michaels grow up.
Yep.
From the scrawny rocker kid, the annoying kid brother heel.
Yeah.
That period in 95 where you had the scruff going, that was a really good look for him, I thought.
Yeah. One of questionable sexuality. Yes. yes, and also yes. like cis men, not many of you. 1995, Sean, yes. like understood. He really has grown into this. And now he's fully on cut. Like he's like cut Sean.
To go back to 95 Sean for a second, if you want to see somewhat of a hidden gem in that run, I think YouTube still has it. 1995 Super Bowl of Wrestling is a Smoky Mountain card with WWF talent sprinkled in.
Interesting.
I don't think Cornette's on commentary, but Smoky Mountain can be a frightening in some points. It
could be a frightening also, experience, yeah.
Hot baby face Tracy Smothers, for example. Good grief.
Or I think early Benoit and Jericho, and like Lance Storm and Jericho. I think I don't know about Benoit, but early Lance Storm and Jericho had a couple runs in Smoky Mountain that were unreal. And of course, if you like me, just absolutely need to occasionally see New Jack just lay into the white people as a whole. Smoky Mountain Wrestling is for you.
Binging the TV run, watching that week to week, like, how did he get out of there in one piece?
Oh my God.
Also, JR was down there commenting 1 week, and he had a line that has stuck with me. New Jack has hired a civil rights attorney, and I think you know what that means. No, Jim, what does it mean?
Well, yeah, please, Jim, lay it out for us in detail. God, again, there's no heroes, by God. But to further make a point, Bret Hart now comes out, and the place explodes to Vince's dismay, to the point where even Lawler was like, oh, okay. Like, I thought you guys liked the other guy, but holy shit. They lose it, and this is pre-97. Like, he really the guy, and like, history tells us that Vince is probably already likely planning his demise in his head at this point. Like, he's gonna try to give him the worst 1997
possible. If he wasn't, Sean might have been.
If he wasn't, Sean definitely was. And but Brett, as we will find out, turns that shit into gold, which I think pissed Vince off more and more over time.
And boy, was it interesting watching them being nice to each other, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's real weird. Sean starts off with respect. He has respect for him. Lawler yells, "What?" And I find myself agreeing with the king, which I hate. It's a decent promo, though. He says Brett is the best that there was. He might end up being the greatest there, best there ever will be. But the best there is right now is Shawn Michaels. And I was like, okay, fantastic promo. Like, that was really well, like a well-written promo. Bret comes back and it's a Bret Hart promo. And I was just like, this is great. Like, it's nothing special, but I don't want it to be. It's Bret Hart. And he just does his thing. He's like, yo, you fought big dudes, you know, eh? Buying the best there is, the best there was. Like, it just says, you're like, oh, that? Oh, no. And then say the thing.
You know, for being a Western Canadian, Bret mastered Minnesota nice.
He did. Oh, holy shit. Really? That was a secret power. He really had it. I can attest to that.
But, I mean, this segment to me is what... the backbone of what made this episode better than Nitro.
Yep, I was just gonna say, and that this is the thing that like really elevated it for me.
You know, but you've got a fresh main event at the time, but the you can see it up and down the show. The promotion is in focus with what it wants to do at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
and it's not a flashy show. It's not. It's clear. It's not as not as action-packed as we see even a year later,
yeah.
But on a fundamental level, you have to give it to them this time. Vince and The Office knew what they wanted to do with this show, had the road and set up for Mania, and even the promotion for next week. Brand against Hunter, Shawn against the Kid. I'm sure the Click weren't figuring out how to undermine Bret at that point.
Again, there were signs. So there were signs of the Click is also getting their fingers in. But no, you are absolutely correct. You're correct. This is one of the more coherent of the Raws. The Raws have been, I will admit, a slog lately. They and it really comes down to them just feeling like they don't have a direction. This whole show had a direction. And like Vince, I think, really had a lot into it, because like him and Shawn play off each other, you know, a lot in this second half too. Like Bret repeats the respect but says, I'll kick your ass when the bell rings, and I'm like, yep, that's Bret. Vince asks Shawn about his conditioning. Shawn talks about getting beat up a lot, and Vince like smiles, like clearly showing his, you know, bias, like, yeah, you got beat up by Marines, big ones. Let's keep talking about it. Remember when I had you pass out because of CTE? I'm not a monster. But then Shawn hits the conditioning line. And I was like, yes, see, Vince fed that to him. He's like, look at my condition of my abs and all this. And it's like, okay, yep, this is all coming together. Bret says he is the Energizer Bunny, but Canadian. He just keeps going and going and going and going.
as people who are not his wife could attest.
Yes, and then here's Piper, the president with things to say. He possibly my favorite part of both shows, though. He takes the mic from Vince and like smacks him on the shoulder, like, hey, go have a seat, kid. I am so like, oh, I love him. I'm eating it up. Piper's like disdain for Vinny is the greatest. He comes out and yells at the fans for booing Bret Hart. And he says, you know, I've heard this guy even once beat Roddy Piper. I don't know. I wasn't there. And I was like, okay, I love him. He's terrible. I love him. Fucking love wrestling. This is so good. But he says he wants no bullshit ending and, you know, conditioning, blah, blah, blah. There needs to be a clear winner. You know, he says, Shawn, abs don't mean nothing. And that Bret has been beat up. Anyone can have a lucky night and catch a fall. So it's not one fall. It's the man who can catch as many falls as the other man over a period of time. And everyone's like, all right, okay. And then they ask him, like, you know, you got a problem with that? And they both say no. And then they go, well, wait, how long? And instantly, I was like, this is genius. Because Piper's like 1 hour and the place blows up. And there it is. Like, I have chills because Piper's laying out the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12. It's official. Like, I can't. They shake hands. It's weird seeing them like kind of happy with each other, probably for the last time, you know, and like all of this was worth it.
They you did know it what? Right. I went back and I watched the reconciliation promo after this, and they're standing practically in like almost the same spots even.
Yeah.
And it's weird having that talk. I mean, talk about drawing the longest of lines, and what a trajectory that ended up being.
Yeah, holy shit! Who could have guessed that Bret Hart would be the one guy looking coming out of all of this looking good? You know, like, because like you could at the time they did a good job of making him the heel. You know, because like in 97, like he was doing a good job of making you hate him, and like he's a master of his craft. And now the reality of everything, he's like the first guy to come out and go, Vince is fucked. That's fucked up. Oh man, like everyone else is dancing around it, and he's like, nah, fuck that guy. And that's just, I never would have guessed. You know, it's wild. But that's, God, WrestleMania 12, patrons, get ready. It's going to be a banger. Like, I try not to do spoilers, but it's one of my favorite WrestleMania. I'm a sucker for an Iron Man match. This is one of my favorite WrestleMania matches of all time.
So when you mentioned, originally when we talked about, you know, me doing a show, I thought you meant 1985.
Yeah.
And then when I looked back and saw this, you know, and I went and looked up the show, a lot hit me because I remember where I was in life when this show happened. I had just started at San Diego State University. I was working at the student paper.
Mm.
And joining me there was my friend Eric Howard. And you talk about being bullied as a fan growing up. We got more weird looks because we went to junior college together. And we nagged and we complained and we wormed our way. And we finally produced a one-page wrestling section for our junior college newspaper.
Fighting the good fight, Art. Well done.
Somewhere around here, I still have my photo of the two of us. I'm doing the Michaels bit. He's doing the Diesel.
Yes.
So we ended up going, you know, we were big fish in a little pond. We go up to Division I to, you know, a college.
Yeah.
And it's a whole other ball game, literally, because we're both working at the sports desk at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found out Mania's coming to Anaheim, which is about an hour and a half drive from San Diego.
Oh yeah, and so you're like right there.
Yeah, so we've got to get something going. So we contacted WWF PR, and they got us an interview with Shawn Michaels.
Shut up, really?
The problem was, they weren't able to lock down a time. So there was a period of about 1 week where he and I would take turns manning one phone in the newspaper office when we weren't in class. And it went like 3-4 days without getting a call. I remember at one point, one of the copy editors of the paper just kind of walked by and saw us hovering over this phone. she just said, don't you guys have classes? And as it turns out,
scoop, damn it.
As it turns out, I was in class and Eric got the call from Sean, and they had a nice chat, which we published.
Oh, wow.
And he, for some reason, he was able to actually go to the show. And he, you know, and he had a good time. I don't know if he actually published anything out of it. But I tell this story and I name check him because since then Eric has become a promoter for Kitsune Pro Wrestling, which specializes in Joshi and women's matches, and who has booked big Dark Sheik on one of his shows.
Hell yes, we are a Dark Sheik fan. The show is a Dark Sheik show. Awesome. That's exquisite. So did you guys end up going to the show, though? Or
he did. I don't remember why I couldn't make it, but he did.
That's
he got a press box and the whole thing.
Oh my God, you were so close to greatness. Holy fuck. That would have been amazing. Holy shit. So hell yeah. I love when a plan I didn't have comes together and like we get the build up to WrestleMania 12 and you have that. That's amazing. Holy shit. But back in 1996, I poor JR, we're talking about poor JR. They're making fun of Mean Gene, the Scheme Gene, and his call-in line. And now, like 2 weeks later, they have JR hawking the superstar line with such mm-hmm. classic questions as, are Goldust and Piper an item? Fuck me. They were indeed signed.
You know, that whole, you know, Piper's involvement in this show, it causes some mixed feelings for me. Like, he was my original problematic fave.
Yep, same. Honestly, when I think about it, probably same.
And but, you know, and here, you know, again, looking at it now, the idea of the guy who threatened a promotion you know, when it had his chance on the national stage in story, you know, the whole Cyndi Lauper thing.
Yeah.
Now he's got the keys to the kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't really do anything with it other than stuff like this. And it seemed like somewhat of a defeat for Roddy Piper, the character.
And I'm guessing that was probably how Vince wanted it to come across. Because, like, my understanding of the behind the scenes of this is that, oh, God, okay. I find myself often just far too many shades of white to have to talk about some of this. hence the general content warning in all of the notes. But I make this joke a lot. Roddy Piper's thing is he likes to show up and do a hate crime at WrestleMania. And, like, to the point where you can't even, like, get away from that's what's going on. And this show is part of that. Because the original reason, from my understanding of why he was originally around for this, was that he was going to, Vince was trying to get a fight between him and OJ Simpson. Mm-hmm. I fucking wish I were kidding. And the OJ stuff was one of the first instances of our there were signs mentality in the show when they had a call-in line on one of the Raws, like a live call-in line on one of the Raws of whether or not you thought he was guilty, and then just playing it for laughs and jokes during, like, when it was still very much like kids show, and it was like, what the fuck is going on here? But he was there to try to get a fight with OJ. It ends up not working out. So in the meantime, he's doing this. And he, don't worry, folks, some spoilers, come around for WrestleMania 12, he still gets to do a hate crime. It's just against one of ours. Yay! He does some assault on Goldust. So we have that to look forward to. but yes, so problematic fave, absolutely. And like I always say, like, he's not a great dude. I'm pretty sure he's one of the inspirations for the character in The Wrestler, the Aronofsky film, because, like, he had some real hard times later on. And this is definitely one of it. But this is around the era too, I think, where a couple of years after this, he has that, everyone should look up, he goes on Bill Maher's show and just reads Bill Maher for shit.
Yeah,
and, like, it's one of those things where it's like, you got to applaud the guy. And he's like, is it fake? And he, like, whips his ass out. Like, look at the bolts in my hip, motherfucker. Owen's dead. Like, is it fake? Like, my friend's gone. So, like, yeah, I'm all about Piper. It's just sad that, sure enough, superstar line had to be noted. They're giving in already.
And, you know, by the end of 96, he ends up in WCW, and he is re-energized because, once again, you know, he's standing up to the Hogan monolith.
Yep, and that's his biggest, almost legacy-defying in the sense of, like, a lot of what his career was about standing up to Hogan all the way through. And I think it's because I really feel it was personal. That, like, Roddy really did not like what this guy stood for. Like, because Roddy was a shooter. Like, Roddy would actually absolutely fuck you up. And Hogan was a bodybuilder who had to be told what to do. And so, like, that is definitely a thing that sticks around for fucking sure. And absolutely, I look forward to when he shows up in WCW because I feel like the NWO Hogan, Hollywood Hogan stuff would have started to get really stale really fast if they didn't bring in the one guy that we could still give a fuck about Hogan seeing again. You know what I mean?
And that segment, when you get to it, it's unreal. one of the rare bits of Piper lore that aged well.
Yeah, it really did. And so yeah, I am very much looking forward to that, and I'm happy that Piper's here, even if it's gonna get weird. But in the meantime, we get the handicap match, the end of Camp Cornette, thankfully, brought to you by Tyco RC Maximum Heat. love it. It presents us Owen and Bulldog versus Yokozuna. I imagine Yoko wins this. And it starts with Owen and Davies, like, it's starting their, like, road to being the new Hart Foundation. And again, I get excited because that's my era. When I started watching, I knew Owen and Davey as the Hart Foundation. That's what they were to me. And a little bit of Davey with problematic hairstyles from the VHS tapes. to say the least. As we now know, high as hell on crack cocaine. love you, Davey. But it this is, you know, a match that has to happen. Like, they set it up. I feel like Vince would have been happy if it, and I would have been happy if they ended it with the Hart and Shawn like face off. It was really great. But ref makes Bulldog get out of the ring, so theoretically it'll be one-on-one. And I'm like, my brain does the Sure Jan meme, you know? Like, I know how this is going to go. But yeah, Yoko and Owen are just so good. I love watching them work together, whether it's, you know, with each other or against each other. At one point, Yoko does like a whip reversal into a lariat, and Owen just dies. And I'm like, yes, please, more of this. Oh, God, I didn't mean... Oh, Jesus, I should probably change that. It's going to be hard to edit that because that was just straight up real in my notes. Oh, it just dies, and I immediately go, wait a second. I watched that live. I guess I if I took that trauma in real time, I get to joke about it. I think that's how this works.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that was one of the few pay-per-views that my parents decided to buy for me that year, and... Ooh, doozy. Yeah, they have a real good streak with that, because later on they got me a pay-per-view for my birthday, and it was when Mick Foley went off the fucking cage. So, yeah, needless to say, the parents weren't happy about that. but in 96, Davey's trying to knock Yoko over, not working. Yoko power slams him, does the backdrop. All this is great. Owen hits a really beautiful missile drop kick, and I'm just like, this is could be awesome, but it's just feels like filler at the same time, and I'm kind of sad about that. Vince says they're following the rules again and doing tags when they come back from commercial, and I was like, okay, sure. Lawler says that Cornette stressed to not hit a man when he's down, unless you're sure he won't get back up. And I took note because I don't doubt that he has actually said that in real life. That, again, fucking corny. It's all those things where it's like, he's so good at this because that's just who he is as a person. but they do the same bit with distracting the ref again, like they did right before commercial. Like, it's like the commercial never happened. Owen goes for a big flying elbow. Yoko moves. Yoko has really pretty braids in, and I like that a lot. He's looking good, Uncle Ronnie. And as everyone starts getting bored, Vader walks out in perfect timing. Black leather jacket over his ring gear, which made me laugh. Like, we got to put you in street gear. And he's Vader. And like, I just put it over. This is my street gear. I don't wash it. I never take it off. like, it's just.
He's like, Pack.
Yeah, he's like, Pack. Yeah, yeah. Yes, exactly. Vader was the 90s version of Pack. He's just always ready. Oh, man. So Vince lets us know, cutting all the subtext out, you know, just pasting it in your face, that Yoko and Vader at WrestleMania, and this is why we did this. There's no way that this ends in a pitfall, because, like, he's not gonna not fuck with them. Vincent King run down next week's card, even though, like, this is all over very quickly. He gets the DQ. Jake the Snake comes out, and it's just like, okay, you're setting all of this up for us for WrestleMania. I'm actually very excited about the prospect of Ahmed and Vader, but I guess Vader and Yoko are having at it first. But I can't remember if that ever actually happened. I feel like that's something.
Ahmed versus Vader?
Yeah. Did I Mandela affect that? I feel like they eventually do that. And if not, I'm going to be sad because they had a moment here where the crowd went nuts watching.
They had a cage match, said they had a few matches.
Good. But not necessarily like a run.
Right, nothing. Two singles matches, two tags.
Yeah, that's not what I want. Boo! So my brain totally made that up. Well,
it's a casualty of Ahmed's own star-crossed run.
Yeah,
and really. Vader never really fitting into the WWF machine. At all.
Yeah, he was too Vader. You can't make him do anything but what Vader wants. Unless you're Paul Orndorff, mm-hmm. the one time. But yes, I would like to see that. Mm-hmm. And all that was all right. I mean, Jake's just kind of there with the snake. and then that's the gist of it. We get to what seems like the natural end, right? So
you would think.
So of course they did it to us again, kids. Okay. We're going to Larry Fling live. To further make fun of Ted and the Huckster. And I immediately I looked at how much time was left because I was like, okay, I have to take note. They did this for 3 minutes.
The longest 3 minutes I have ever experienced.
In my whole life, I am so done with this. It's been months of this. The gist of it is just they're old. He puts a random toilet flush because poop is funny. You know, like, it's just the worst, all the worst events. They allude to WCW storylines, which seems like nothing really after Eric gave away the results. Like you said, that was the right move. Again, circling back, concur, right move, because, like, what do you do? What do you do to respond to this? You know, you just go, what the fuck are you doing? I'm just going to, like, this is silly. So, like, yeah, Ted calls in from over the satellite. They mention Jane Fonda because women, am I right? Again, everyone is old. Ted overpays them all. And, like, this is just sad. Huckster gets mad and grabs a chair and then gets scared when Larry holds up a high heel. And I was just like, okay, that's funny because, again, like, that's a legitimate jab at, like, the storyline at least. You know, like, this was sad and pathetic 3 months ago, but that at least made me giggle. I don't even know what to call this, though. It's just the saddest shit. Like you said, the longest.
And it's the main event position.
In the main event position where they should be giving, like, their big going out. This is really what we want you to look at. I don't know, I probably would have turned the channel and caught the end of Raw or Nitro, you know what I mean? Like, but I don't think he cares. I think at this point it's still more important for him to get his digs in and feel right than to actually win. But thankfully, that's Raw. We got through Raw. And you mentioned earlier, skipping around, as far as who won this week, I do find myself agreeing with you. I hate to say it, but Raw, even with, you know, Al Snow and the homophobia and all that, like, the excitement for WrestleMania was more than I could say for WCW and Uncensored. And I feel like that's a fair criticism.
You know, but within a year and a half, this show as well, it might as well not happen.
Yeah, it may, exactly. Like you said, it's we're in that space where all of this is going to be gone. It makes me really happy that I did this show. And like, thank you for bringing that point, because, like, I don't think any of us have really nailed that down yet, just how forgettable all this is. Because watching it, I'm still in that place where I'm amazed that it was on TV, you know? And I don't stop to think about the fact that, like, why didn't I ever think about the fact that this was on TV?
You know, and part of that has to be said, is propaganda. The Monday Night Wars show is as effective a piece of propaganda as you will find in political circles.
Absolutely. Again, shout out to Josie. I'm coming for you. like we mentioned her work a lot because how can you not? And right. Like the neo kayfabe of it all. And it absolutely is. And I've watched several of those, like, Monday Night War shows, but the one that WWE put out, like, on the network was just egregious. Like, watching it as someone who at that time, by that point, I already had a mind kind of primed for looking for propaganda in the you and Brooke sense, you know. Like I said, I knew Brooke for a long time. That's how we knew similar people who were looking at this kind of stuff outside of wrestling. But then watching that show and going, oh my god, this is egregious. It's just on the nose that they're trying to rewrite what actually happened and completely change what we think of what actually happened. And eventually that led to, like, well, I got to rewatch all this, you know, because, like, I need to, it's that completionist, like you said. When someone asked me a couple of guests ago, like, Raw was really bad, and they're like, how do you just keep doing this to yourself? I'm like, I have to know.
I think every wrestling fan has been asked that at some point. Why do you keep doing this to yourself?
Yeah, why do you keep, because I got to, like, I don't expect you to understand it. I barely understand it.
You know, and I think for a number of fans in my cohort generationally, by this point, ECW had entered the picture. It literally is in our television picture.
Yeah, they were making themselves known at the bigger shows at this point.
You know, but I remember watching them run in, I think it was at least one Raw at this point and one pay-per-view. And I'd read about them a little bit in the magazines. What turned the corner for me was, and man, this is so horrible to say now, but the Chris Benoit Al Snow match that got, that was big with Tape Traders at the time. that was the wrestling that a lot of us were looking for. That, you know, the skill on display had advanced. Maybe not to the level of a Japan, maybe not even to the level of a high-end lucha.
Yeah, but it was getting better. It was getting past that, the matches we saw in Nitro with all the rest holds and like the real old, like could have been a Saturday morning feel kind of matches. We're moving past that.
And once Bischoff lucked into the NWO stuff, that added the storyline component.
Yeah,
to cement that. And, you know, we know that as has happened many times since, and I put the Death Rider into this category currently, nobody ever knows how to end these stories.
Yeah, not even Bischoff.
Not even Bischoff.
Yep, that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to continuing to look at as we continue this show, is the fact that the NWO was so overly, like, important and like took it all over and changed the game, but at the end of it, it was on the long run, it was a failure in the sense that it got so bad and just everyone was NWO, and then the fucking Wolfpack, and then everything else in the later Vince Russo days, which, oh my god, if we kids, sickos, if y'all listening along think that Raw is bad now, wait till we get to 1999 Nitros. Get ready. Like, start and enjoy the good ones while you can, is what I'll say.
You know, in a medium that never ends, and wrestling never ends, really. Mm-hmm. U.S. wrestling never ends. But I feel Japan is, New Japan specifically, is better built for this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a medium that never ends, we find that a lot of promoters just don't know when to hit the off-ramp.
Yep. They too much of a good thing, and they just don't know when to set the toy down. Very unfortunate.
And it's, you know, when the booms boom, but the bus cycles are horrible.
Yeah, real bad. And it's been fun starting off in a bus cycle. Like we said,
if you really want to hurt yourself, do a podcast in 2002, 2003.
That's literally when I stopped watching because of how bad it was. It was right after 9/11. That era was real bad. We'll see, once we get past the 5 years of Monday Night War, how I'm feeling. as far as a favorite match this week, I don't know if you had one. I personally went with Road Warriors and Harlem Heat because I'm an easy mark. like you said, the passing of the torch was really something to behold, if you will.
I would probably go with that too. Best segment had to be Hart, Michaels, and Piper.
Yep, no, that was the best segment for sure. And now we're really getting to that era where you can make the distinction. That's fun. Agreed, though. Like that, I mean, that one Raw, like that's what one Raw was, that whole segment for me. And I'm really excited for WrestleMania 12. And gosh, we did it. We did the show. Thank you for fucking being here and following Brooke's assignment.
Oh, you know, thank you for having me on for this week in particular.
Luck of the draw, I picked a good one. But yes, excellent. In the meantime, this is where, if you wanted to tell people where to find any work you're working on or anything that you want to be found or not found at, this is where you will say those things, Art.
I'm between projects at the moment. You can find me on Blue Sky, A Boy Named Art. I do recommend you look up Kitsune Pro Wrestling, KITSUNE, on Instagram. Follow along, see if when they're coming back online.
Hell yes. I love me a kitchenette and pro wrestling. So those two things at the same time. That seems right up my alley. Well, thank you very much for being here again. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We're 26 episodes in. We've gotten past that first, like, quarter mark. Well done. you can find us on Blue Sky as well at mnffpod.bsky.social. The Instagram, which will eventually get updated again, at mnffpod. And if you want to join us for the Patreon watch parties and various extras that occasionally come along, we're a little behind because of technical difficulties at this point. They're making it harder to stream graps over Discord and such with Peacock, where like you can hear the audio, but it won't play the video. Unga. So that is at patreon.com/mnffpod if we ever figure that out. But otherwise, thank you again. Thank you, Art. Thank you all for listening. And we will see you next week for more Raw versus Nitro on Monday Night Fake Fights. Okay, bye.